since April of 1985. This is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. Ken Onischerk here in Lockport, Illinois, and I will give you the National Hockey League that I have up to date. In the Eastern Conference, Atlanta Flames, right, 680 WCNN with Dan Kamel and Jeff Odgers. The Boston Bruins on 1030 WBZ with Bob Beers and Dave Goucher. The Buffalo Sabres on 550 WGR, Rick Jenneret and Harry Neal. The Carolina the Hurricanes, formerly the Hartford Whalers and the New England Whalers, on 99.9 WCMC in the network with Chuck Caton and John Forslund. The Florida Panthers on 790 WAXY, Randy Mahler and Bill Lindsay. The Montreal Canadiens in English, 800 CJAD with Rick Moffat and Murray Wilson. In French, 730 CKAC, Martin McGuire and Danny Dube. In New Jersey, 660 WFAN, Matt Laughlin and the only female broadcaster, Sherry Ross. The New York Islanders on 1130 WBBR with Steve Mears and Chris King. The New York Rangers on 1050 WEPN with a bunch of them. It's either Kenny Albert, Spencer Ross, Bob Wischusen, Joe Tolleson, Mike Crispino, and Dave Maloney. Depends who's available. The Ottawa Senators in English, 1200 CFGO with Dave Schreiber and Sean Van Allen. In French, 1150 CJRC, Jean-Philippe Bertrand and Alain Sens-Cartier. Philadelphia Flyers, either 610 WIP or 1210 WPHT, Tim Saunders and Chris Therrien. The Pittsburgh Penguins, 105.9 WXDX, Mike Lang and Phil Burke. The Tampa Bay Lightning on 620 WDAE, Dave Mishkin, Phil Esposito, home games only. The Toronto Maple Leafs on 640 CFMJ with Dennis Byak or Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. The Washington team on 1500, I believe it is, WWWT. There's been some changes going on there. The Senators with, Capitals, Steve Colby and Ken Sabourin. Okay. Western Conference, Anaheim Mighty Ducks on 830 KLAA. We'll see what happens after the Angels finish playing baseball. Steve Carroll and Brett Severin. The Calgary Flames on 960 CFAC Team Radio, Pete Maher and Mike Rogers. The Chicago Blackhawks, new station 720 WGN with John Wiedemann and Troy Murray. The Colorado Avalanche out of Littleton now on 1510 KKCN, but that's KKCK, but I have other information, says 104.3 KKFN, so those out there will have to tune in. Norm Jones and Mark Moser, the Columbus Blue Jackets, Ohio, 1460 WBNS, 101.1 WWCD, George Matthews and Bill Davidge. The Dallas Stars on 820 WBAP, Ralph Stranges and Daryl Rio. The Detroit Red Wings on 1270 and 97.1 WXYT, Ken Call and Paul Woods. The Edmonton Oilers, 630 CHED, Rod Phillips and Morley Scott. The Los Angeles Kings on 1150 KTLK, K-Talk, Nick Nixon and Darrell Evans. The Minnesota Wild, 830 WCCO, Bob Kurtz and Tom Reed. The Nashville Predators on 104.5 WGFX out of suburban Gallatin with Pete Weber and Terry Crisp. The Phoenix Coyotes, and that boy, they've had sure change of stations. It was 1360 at one time. Now it's on 910, Extra Sports 910, with Bob Hietaus and Louis DeBrusque. St. Louis Blues, 1120 KMOX, Chris Kerber and Kelly Chase. San Jose Sharks on 98.5 KUFX, Dan Rusinowski and Jamie Baker. and the Vancouver Canucks on 1040 CKST. John Shorthouse, it depends, Rick Ball, Ken Kennard, Joey Kenward, or Tom Lashide. Now I'll bring some, fortunately, some sad news. The death of former Atlanta Braves baseball announcer Harry Christopher Skip Carey Jr., August 12, 1939 to August 3, 2008 at age 68. Best known for his long career as play-by-play announcer of Atlanta Braves, the son of Harry, the father of fellow Braves broadcaster Chip, son Josh, and Harry grew up in baseball. He studied television and radio at the University of Missouri, received a degree in journalism, began his career calling St. Louis University and St. Louis Hawks basketball in 1968. He moved with the Hawks to Atlanta, where he also called Atlanta Flames hockey games. In 1976, he was added to the broadcast team for the Braves, a position he held till his death. And in September of 07, he was asked not to announce the League Division Series and was kept exclusively to the Braves as the team broadcast moved to the local Atlanta Peachtree Network, which is a direct descendant of the original WTBS. Skip was inducted into the Braves Hall of Fame in 04 along with longtime broadcaster Pete Van Wieren. He's been recognized with six Georgia Sportscaster of the Year awards, as well as a Georgia Area Emmy Award. December of 06, the Braves organization announced that Carey and Van Wieren signed three-year contracts to continue doing Braves games on the radio network. However, he had much problems with health problems. He announced only 10 games in 07 before being relegated. Skip's broadcasts were characterized by his witty and sarcastic sense of humor, a personality trait that endeared him to most fans, but alienated him from some, particularly during a long losing streak of the 80s. During a recent game against Pittsburgh in the 80s, he said, "Like lambs to the slaughter, the Braves take the field." More recently, in a game against Florida, the Braves loaded the bases, which Carey quipped, "The bases are loaded, just like Jack McKeon probably wishes he was." During the 04 season, Carey frequently made fun of Braves pitcher Jung Bong, declaring every time the opposing team got a hit off of him, "That's another hit off Bong." In 08, a player hit a pop fly so high, Carey said, "That wouldn't have been a home run in a phone booth." And frequent targets of Skip's were other quiet people in his time. He also was known for his tendency to identify the hometown of fans who catch foul balls during Brave games and jests. Fans who were indicted in the metro area were identified by a random suburb, though there was no legitimacy. Similar, when daytime games went long, he frequently gave a traffic report at exactly 5 o'clock on radio. It consisted of him rattling off a random list of major Atlantic arteries, describing each one as hopelessly backed up. In addition to his play-by-play duties, he also hosted a pregame call-in show until 04, during which he was notorious for insulting on-air fans with curt and sarcastic responses. Other than that, they know most about his health problems. On August 3rd, the Braves announced that Carey had passed away. His wife reported to the Atlanta Constitution that she thought her husband was napping and saw that he had passed, and he had many health problems over the years that I won't get into. But he was a wonderful broadcaster, and I remember many years from on WSB 750. Couldn't hear him the last 3 years because of games being on 640 GST. That's it for now. I'll be back next month with the NBA. Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Musings of the Millers. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors.
Paul Burkhart from Little Rock, Arkansas. I just wanted to let you know that we really enjoyed the contest. I'd like to see it continue, if at all possible. So let's do a country one. That's the story from here. Sorry we couldn't make it down to Pittsburgh, but that's the way it goes. 7-3 to all.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville, Alabama, answering Ken Honestchuk's question, what would I change if I were the president of radio? Two things. Number one, I would go back to the rule that any company can only own 7 AMs and 7 FMs, 1 AM and 1 FM in any given market. Number two, only stations that were on at night as of 1975 would be allowed to go on to be on at night. All the others would have to go off. That's what I'd like to see.
Hello, members. Ken Anischuk Sports in Lockport, Illinois, on Tuesday, September 2nd. I look on the internet and on radioandrecords.com, and it says that Lincoln Financial detached Sports KKFN 950 from its simulcast of FM and changed the AM to Pop Oldies as KRWZ, Cruisin' Oldies 950 this morning on the 2nd. And they will be doing 9,500 songs in a row commercial-free, then introduce personalities in the future once that's done. And remember, the Hockey Avalanche and the NBA Nuggets will move to 1510 in suburban Littleton this winter. That's it for now. Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is Don Finney in Miami, Florida. I was just thinking, you might want to set up a thing on the DX audio service and as to the history of portable radios. I know they started in the late, maybe the mid-40s, and they mushroomed up and up and up, and they became more complicated, more bands as the years went by, I think. But I'm very ignorant about that, and I wonder if you'd fill us in about that, if you possibly could sometime in the near future, if you think it's a good idea. And thank you so much.
Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. We had another fellow up here at Chum, been there for 20 years. His last name is Hodge. He just left the station there. Dick Buchanan died, that owned CKPC here in Brantford. This is the third generation of the Buchanan family that has owned the station. His mom owned it for a long time. She lived to be in her 90s. He was 76. And Chester Smith, who was a longtime friend of mine from my California days, he was quite a business tycoon. He made some great records. He was a great country disc jockey. And he put on a station in Ceres, California, C-E-R-E-S-K-L-O-C, back in the 60s. It was one of the outlying areas of Modesto in the upper San Joaquin Valley. I started to know him when he was at KTRB, CHOK in Sarnia, Ontario, 1070. They're simulcasting now on FM 103.9, something like what Chatham Station is doing. CIGM 790 in Sudbury has applied for FM. I hope they'll keep an AM going because they're playing a lot of good country classics, plus they're carrying ESPN Radio Sports an awful lot, too. Some of the stations are starting to stay up more, too. 740 in Toronto is now under the colonies of CFZM, Zoomers Radio, but they're still doing the fine job of adult standards and so on and so forth. Chuck Swirsky officially has left CJCL, the Fan 590, and the Toronto Raptors broadcast. He is in Chicago now for the second time. He is getting the Bulls job on ESPN 1000 there. And I'm very sorry to hear, too, of the death of Skip Carey down in Atlanta. I knew Skip for a long time. He was always very nice to me. And for my part, a very good announcer. When I first met him, he was doing Atlanta Hawks basketball. And he did the Braves games there for 31 years. I think he came on there the year after they let Milo Hamilton go. And him and Pete Van Weeren and different ones like that have worked those broadcasts for a long time.
Greetings, audio service members. This is John Sanders. I'm calling from the Devondale, Michigan area. I have a question for you out there. It's about the top of the hour, legal ID that they're split, the stations are supposed to do. Is it required that a station play their top of the hour promo exactly at the top of the hour? Because I've been noticing on some stations they have been playing their top of the hour legal IDs 30 minutes before the top of the hour, or even 10 minutes after the top of the hour, or even 8 minutes after the top of the hour, something like that. So is it required that they do that, or is that something that they pick on their own? If anyone can help me out, that'd be great. Senators, good day.
Hello, Fred and DXers. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland. Yes, there was a buyout. Last Thursday, the Redskins were on WTNT 570. I don't know what the call sign is for 730 in Alexandria, 980, and 1260. They were within a few seconds, so you could hear the broadcast repeating itself if you flip from station to station. Also, I'm noticing this more and more now. Stations going off suddenly for an hour or more. And last evening, it was 1260, and I was able to catch a Syracuse station and maybe a Disney station in Boston. I'm not sure. 1270, I caught a station in Cumberland, Maryland, and 1250, I got WTAE in Pittsburgh, and I believe a country music station in West Virginia. I think sometime last week, was either Tuesday or Wednesday, 1500 went off the air suddenly for about an hour or so, and I think I got the station in Detroit on 1500. 1510, I think I got the station in Salem, New Jersey. I may have gotten WLAC. I'm not sure if I got the Boston station. On 1490, I think I got the Frederick station that carries the Nationals. I want to know if this is just a local thing, or is this happening around the country where stations just suddenly go off without warning and stay off for 2 or 3 hours?
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse and you're a DX Audio Service or EDXN subscriber, you can just call 360-469-0189. That's 360-469-0189, 24 hours a day for members only. Well, to answer Victor's question, I don't know if that's a gift or a detriment, because when a station does go off the air, that's a chance for us DXers to have a chance to hear some outlying radio that we don't normally hear. So I think I would put that in the gift category. If you want some speculation about why it's happening, I think it's because a lot of stations don't necessarily put a lot of credence into having engineers on staff. So obviously when they have a breakdown, it takes them longer to get the problem rectified. I've had that same issue happen here in Lima, Ohio, with the two AM stations that are on the air. When they go off for a couple hours at a time. And I have been able to hear some very interesting DX. Well, speaking of DX, let's shoot it about, 800 miles or so, 600 miles? I'd have to get out the old map and take a look. But let's go up to the Musings booth up in Minnesota. Here's Mark Dernberger.
Mark Dernberger here in the Musings control room to respond to Fred's questions in a recent broadcast about the oldest radio stations and some of the old stations in Minnesota and what happened to them. Minnesota's first radio station was 9SV in St. Cloud, Minnesota, owned and operated by 19-year-old Robert Witchen. Bob was my Elmer. When he took to the air back in 1920, he broadcast phonograph music for the few who could pick it up on their cat's whisker sets. The St. Cloud Daily Times got in on it. They hired Witchen to build a station in 1922 called WFAM. But the lack of advertisers, due to a lack of listeners with real sets, forced the station to close down a few years later. It reemerged in 1938 as KFAM, now known as KNSI on 1450. You asked about WLB and WCAL, and in the Twin Cities, originally there were stations WAAL, WBAD, WAAH. Owned by the three metropolitan newspapers, they were time-sharing the wavelength, probably 417 meters. They all ceased broadcasting and pooled their efforts in a new station, WLAG. This station went on the air in 1922 and stayed on the air until 1924, when they ran out of money. WLAG's main competition was WBAH, owned by the Dayton Company. WLAG and WBAH time-shared 417 meters, both then left the air for financial reasons in July of 1924. WLAG would return to the air on October 2nd, 1924, as legendary station WCCO. KSTP originally came on the air as WAMD, where all Minneapolis dances. WLB came on the air early on in the very early 1920s. It was on and off for several years. It's now known as KUOM. It was once time-shared with WCAL. WRHM, you asked about. That became WTCN, which became WWTC on 1280. And outstate pioneers in the early 20s included current stations WDAY, WEBC, and KBRF, which began operation as KGDE. And finally, there was original station KFMT, which became WHAT, which begat WGWY, which spawned WDGY, and is now KFAN. And as we know from Bill Hale's reports, WDGY has been on several frequencies in the area. Well, I hope that helps Fred's report and answers his questions. And you should know that in the upcoming year, we're going to begin a frequency-by-frequency report telling you what stations came on the air on a certain frequency and what stations are on that frequency today. It's going to be a lot of work, but also a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark. Let's finish off this tape with the sounds from the 2008 National Radio Club Convention. We start it with the thoughts of Kermit Gehry, who is the National Radio Club's oldest member. Here's Kermit in his own words.
Hi, this is Kermit Gehry of Walnutport, Pennsylvania, sending greetings to all my friends and fellow members of the National Radio Club assembled in Pittsburgh for the annual Labor Day weekend convention, this year celebrating the 75th anniversary of our club, which was founded in a park in York, Pennsylvania on Labor Day 1933 by a group of area DXers headed by Robert Weaver. Having enjoyed the two previous conventions hosted by John Malachy, I had hoped to attend again this year, but I have developed a severe ambulatory difficulty due to a loss of balance caused by an inner ear condition. My present travel is limited mainly to local venues, grocery store, bank, post office, and doctor's offices, and never at night. This year holds a special significance for me because November 17th marks the 75th year of my continuing membership in the National Radio Club. I learned about the new club on a DX program that was dedicated to the NRC from station WORK, York, Pennsylvania, on 1320 kilocycles, no kilohertz in those days. I sent for the free sample bulletin that was offered, and when I received it, I was hooked. After all, who could resist a membership offer of only $1.25 for the rest of the DX year? My NRC membership became effective on November 17, 1933. I'm enclosing photocopies of my first membership card, along with a copy of my membership card for the next full year, issued on September 1st, 1934. Both are signed by Robert H. Weaver, the founder and first club president. I have the honor of being the only member remaining from the NRC's first year of existence. I had been a freelance DXer since January 1926, but I was unaware of the satisfaction of collecting verifications from stations that were heard, until I learned via the club that every serious DXer was doing it. My first reception reports on December 9th, 1933, were sent to KROW Oakland, California, and to KLRA Little Rock, Arkansas, and their prompt verifications became the nucleus of my amassing more than 6,500 broadcast band varies through the years, coming from 113 countries on six continents, including 132 from Mexico, 115 from Cuba, 106 from Colombia, and 157 from California, to name a few. I was pleased that my QSL card from Station 7NT, Tasmania, won the NRC all-time distance contest this year. It is joined by 22 other Australian verifications, not the least of which is a QSL card from 2CK Cessnock, New South Wales, with a power of just 300 watts on 1460 kilocycles. I also have 18 verifications from neighboring New Zealand. My best miles per watt verification is from a 50 watt station in Trinidad on 1040 kilocycles. That is a summary of my DX exploits. I have enjoyed my 75 years of NRC membership and credit the club with much of my DX success. I look forward to enjoying additional years of club membership and hope to add to my collection of verifications. Best wishes to all. Enjoy the convention. My thoughts will be with you on this 75th anniversary. And in your festivities, don't forget to pay homage to Bob Weaver, who could not have foreseen that his germ of an idea in that park in York, Pennsylvania on Labor Day 1933 would have flourished to become our great club 75 years later. 73 and best DX to all.
Thank you all for coming tonight. Thank you for coming to Pittsburgh. We will now start with our business meeting first. Fred Vobey and Paul Swearingen, our outgoing wonderful DX News editor, and Fred Vobey, our DX Audio Service editor since 1985.
Keep a slide pass here. I thank all the members. We'll make this short and sweet because I know you are waiting for our act coming up during the auction first. Paul has a little thing to read from the National Radio Club's Board of Directors, which I think is very important. Paul?
I'll just read what Wayne Heinen sent me. He says, over the years, we have dedicated each edition of the log to a club member or log contributor who has supported the effort to serve the hobby. And then to the person that he wrote to, he said, this log has been dedicated to you for your unfailing coverage of our annual convention over these many years. It is actions and dedications like yours that deserves recognition by the board of directors and public acclaim for the work that you did. This year I've decided to dedicate the log to John Malachy. Over the years, John has been the chronicler of the National Radio Club's annual conventions. His unique writing style and his dedication to letting everyone know what happened and who attended has been a tradition in DX News. And so we'd like to congratulate John.
Thank you.
I think it's a very well-deserved honor, John. And as I said last night, and for those of you who were not here last night, I mentioned to John that I think a lot of members appreciate what he does, and it kind of gives a good feeling for all of us to know that this organization is so well regarded and so well taken care of. Thanks again, John. Well, we have some notes to bring you from the board of directors. First of all, you probably know that the DX Audio Service and the DX News and EDXN is doing quite well. Paul, do you have some figures on exactly how many members we have?
Well, Wayne sent these to me, and since he's now membership chairman, I'll take his word for him. He has recorded 154 EDXN members. DX News has 461 USA subscribers. The non-USN DXN subscribers, including exchanges, is 29. So that's holding steady.
Good. We've been doing some changes over at the DX Audio Service, kind of giving some thought to kicking around some different columns, adding some things. So any DX Audio Service members that are in attendance here, if you want to sit down and rap with me tonight about some of the things that you would like to see, I'd be more than welcome to hear your comments. One thing we are changing is our mailing. Typically, we told people that their tapes would be to them on the 10th of the month. We've backed that up to the 30th of the month because we've pretty much determined that our mail problems that we have in Lima, Ohio, is due to our Lima post office. And a lot of times we can mail a tape on 4 days before the end of the month, and it's still not there on the 10th of the next month. So what we're doing is backing it up to the 30th. I realize that doesn't really solve the problem, but the only other way we can do it is have somebody take over the publishing of the magazine, and I don't see any hands going up on that. So I'll just continue to put the tapes together. We also have a shift in the printing of DX News. It's going from Topeka up to Watertown. That is correct?
That's correct.
And Ken Chatterton has cut a deal with a local printer up there, and that's where your DX News is going to be coming from. We still need some help within the club. We're looking for some editors and such. Paul, what do you have on the printed side of the magazine?
Well, I made 20 years, but I'm not really interested in making 21, let's put it that way. But I told the board of directors I'd hang in there for a while at least. But you know, try to make some kind of an effort, try to find someone to take over the publishing. And right now, that's all I'm doing. I've given up, all the printing and mailing duties. Thank goodness. There comes back my Thursdays again. About all I do now is to actually assemble it on a Saturday afternoon and in a document that goes to the printer around 4:30 or 5 o'clock. And so most Saturday, if you're watching EDXN, around 5 o'clock, 5:30, you can probably sign on and get what is actually in the bulletin. And then I send a PDF copy to Wayne and he posts it later. So that comes a little later in the evening. We've gone full speed ahead though with recruiting a few new editors. And we're of course looking for a replacement for Bill Dvorak's column editorship. And Bill, do you want to say anything about that? A little recruiting here now?
Yeah, I hope somebody steps forward. But I'm going to be quitting DDXD West as of January 2nd. I believe that's 14. I believe it's 50. 76-15. So in the meantime, everything comes to me, and you know, we'll just continue as we are. But I really am going to end it as of that. At that time, so appreciate if anybody does step forward. We'll just work hand in hand to get the transfer all made as smooth a way as possible.
Right. We do have a new college sports editor who came on after the last issue went out, and his name is John Sarigan. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his name. He'll have his next column out. In fact, he's already posted some things on EDXN. If you follow that, you know about it. But yeah, anybody that knows anybody that is a member that's too shy to step forward to volunteer to take my job, send them my way. It's not exactly rocket science, but then again, it's not. It's still not to the level of glue and bits of paper. On other pieces of paper anymore, like it was when I took it over. There's some technical expertise needed, but if I can do it, anybody can. So there you have that. Wayne wanted us to ask to see if there was any interest in anyone volunteering to put on the convention next year, to actually put in a bid of anyone here at this point in time.
Maybe
at
Allentown,
Pennsylvania.
Maybe at Allentown.
It's been over 5 years in West New York, so it's
such a nice place.
Could do that again for us.
Okay.
I'd urge you to get all your information together into John Bowker as soon as possible, because we'd love to announce it and promo it. Also, on the volunteer things, real quick, let me mention that on the DX Audio Service side. Those of you who like to air check radio stations, Phil Wayne could really use your help in putting together some market scopes and stuff like that, because we've pretty well ran that column into the ground as far as material goes. So anyone who has the ability to scope down a city and put it on a little column and send it to Phil, he'd greatly appreciate it. And looking at the list, I think we've touched on everything, haven't we?
Well, about everything. The only other thing that I kind of failed to mention was that I was fairly heavily involved with EDXN. Got to the point where there were enough spammers trying to sign on with their spam registrations that I just kind of ran out of time to deal with it. But a fellow named Dave White took over that job and greatly relieved me and gave me a lot more time. And I need to thank him very publicly for his work in doing that. And I still work with it a bit, but he's doing about 90% of the work. And then another name that I want to toss out here of someone who's behind the scenes is Gary Wilt, who handles the duties for keeping NRCDXAS.org on the web. And in fact, this morning, yesterday evening and this morning, I sent him something that I'd spotted, that a background that needed to be changed, and he was right on it, changed it, and everything was fine. So he's doing a wonderful job too. And that's the kind of volunteer that we need, is somebody that has some expertise. And if we, you know, call for an editor, some of the positions don't require as much as others. But technology being what it is, technology has helped us out a lot. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do what I did for 20 years in mailing and putting the thing together without a computer. So there you have it.
And the pay is great, too. It goes up 6% every year. Zero.
And I get to borrow the corporate jet.
That's right, the corporate jet and the condo up in Mansville, New York.
Yep, maybe the yacht. Wonder if any of you have any questions.
See, I told you we didn't have to tell the waitress to take the tomatoes away.
That's right.
All right. Well, hearing none, should we give us
a treasurer's report?
No, but Dick Truax will have that in a couple of months.
He said something about us being solvent, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, Wayne said that the closest I can come is to say that Wayne said the publication orders were just as good as they've ever been. He's basically swamped right now with mailing out logs, and which is always a good sign. He has always said that he's mailed more logs to non-members than to members, and that's a good sign. And Mike?
Yeah, I have a question. With the DX audio service, I love it. It's the greatest thing yet. I was wondering, do you think you could put a column in there every once in a while called either Where Are They Now? Or will you salute a radio station that was big, for example, like the old Kino 13, or salute?
I'd love to, Mike, but the big problem we have is we need writers, people to do some research,
right.
And I can do a little bit of that myself with my schedule. What would really help is if members here in the room, if ever you encounter material either on a website or in a book or something that you can forward on, then we can put it into some kind of coherent column. But to try to come up with it on my own, you know, I'm not the most clever individual, so I'll need some help in putting together something like that.
And Scott?
Are there logs here this weekend?
No. Didn't get printed, and by the time they would have been shipped, it arrived on Tuesday, so I thought that would be a little too late. Any questions? Well, hearing none, should we go over to the award?
Let's do.
Well, for everyone, you know we give out an award every year, 3x5 plaque. And this year, the board of directors voted on a person that unfortunately couldn't be here tonight, but he really deserves it. And it says, for participation in and service to the National Radio Club during its 75 years, we salute Hermit Geary. Hermit is 91 years young. This will be mailed to him.
We have three honored guest speakers tonight. Not one, not two, but three. And our first two guest speakers are heard overnight on KDK Radio tonight and tomorrow night. From midnight to 3, Dr. Knowledge and Misinformation. I want to play you a little snippet, but before I also tell you that Dr. Knowledge is now starting his fifth year of his show on KDK Radio, August 24th, 2004.
It's information. It's knowledge.
Knowledge is power.
The Dr. Knowledge Show continues on News Radio 1020 KDKA.
Thank you, John. Nice to be here. And I always say it's so nice to give a speech because you see live, smiling faces, and I see a lot here tonight. Because, as you know, radio is a very lonely job, especially at night. There's nobody else in the station except the producer and myself, and you can barely see the producer. He's behind a glass. Sometimes he's, you know, on a computer or something or on the phone. So you really feel like you're talking to yourself, and you don't see the people, and it's so nice to give a speech and see them. I do see my wife, misinformation, of course.
I was wondering.
Anyhow, what I thought I'd do, are one of our questions tonight, and I ask you not to, once we get the answer, not to call in, because you'll know the answer. But this is a radio question, which I put in tonight, just in honor of your convention here. And this is a legitimate question, by the way. And the question is, and we'll be doing this in the 12 to 12:30 hour, this past week, on August 28th, was the anniversary of a momentous first on radio. On August 28th, 1922, the first what was broadcast?
Baseball game?
No, it wasn't a baseball game. And by the way, I have a prize for whoever gets the answer. We have three transmitter cubes.
Election results.
So that was in 1920. Pirates game. It wasn't a pirate game. That was in 1921.
Commercial.
You got it. It's an interesting story about that. You know, KDK went on the air November 2nd, 1920, and we're talking almost 2 years later. There still had never been a commercial on radio. Now, how did they make money on radio? How did the owners of the stations make money? Anybody have a clue on that? There were no commercials.
Donations.
Stations? No, not donations, no.
Weren't the stations on the air to sell the product, the radio?
Exactly. The stations were all owned by radio manufacturers, like Westinghouse owned KDKA, for example, and other stations. And their whole idea of radio was to sell radios. And finally, somebody on WEAF in New York got the idea, hey, maybe we could get an advertiser. And they got a company called the Queensboro Realty Company. And that was the first commercial ever broadcast 86 years ago this week. Their idea was not to broadcast news or entertainment. It was simply, of course, originally Marconi's efforts were simply dots and dashes ship to shore, which was really what he had in mind. And in fact, there was, you know, you always hear about, like when computers came out, somebody said, you know, well, who's going to have a computer in their house? When television first came out, one of the movie owners in one of the movie studio owners in Hollywood said, who's going to sit there and watch a box every night? It'll never last. Well, when wireless first came out, one of the smart guys said, well, what good is it other than ship to shore? Anybody can listen in. You have no privacy, like the telephone. He said, it'll never amount to anything. Nobody had the idea that was an advantage, that everybody could listen in. And it wasn't until guys like David Sarnoff and others and Dr. Frank Conrad here in Pittsburgh got the idea that we could broadcast entertainment and news, the radio, wireless change to radios as we know it today. And it took, you know, Marconi started in the late 1800s. Dr. Fessenden was, what, 1906 at Pitt. It took till 1920, as you know, until we had a commercial station on the air, which was KDKA, and then obviously others followed. You guys know all about the history of radio, so I don't want to go into that, so I thought I'd just use some questions that we use on the air, and I have two more KDK transmitter cubes to give away.
Excuse me, can this information
interrupt? Yeah, come on up.
Actually, Dr. Knowledge started the original first ever college radio station, which was in Syracuse, New York, WAER.
General Electric had a plant there, and they were building among the first FM transmitters, and wanted somebody to try it, and they went to the university, which was logical, and said, we'll give you the transmitter, and, you know, we'll experiment with, this was at the beginnings of FM in the late 1940s. So we started a station called WAER, which stood for Always Excellent Radio, the AER. I enjoyed talking to Mike from Miami, WIOD. I love stations where the call letters stand for something. WIOD in Miami is Wonderful Isle of Dreams. WSM is We Serve Millions, I think it was. Millions. We Shield Millions, that was insurance. WGN Chicago was world's greatest newspaper, which it is not. It was owned by the Chicago Tribune originally. The KDK, by the way, doesn't stand for anything. They just got those call letters just by chance. Those were the next four letters on the licenses when they were giving them out to ship-to-shore facilities before the commercial radio. And, you know, they're great call letters because they're so easy to say. You know, it's a great combination of letters, and it's really just by chance that KDKA got that. Well, anyhow, to get away from radio, I'm going to just give you some questions. We'll give two more of these away. And our first question, we've been talking a lot about the political. I don't know if you folks saw the political conventions this week. And by the way, history was made on the television side this week when CNN, for the first time in history, a cable network got more listeners, more viewers, than one of the broadcast networks. CNN got more total viewers than ABC, NBC, or CBS, which has never happened before at the same event.
That's all the time we have on this edition of the DX Audio Service. We hope you enjoyed some of the sounds from the 2008 National Radio Club Convention. Until next time, 73, good DX. Get out and support radio.